There's been flooding in the Rakhentha province. An earthquake hit the Kendra Valley and a tornado struck Tomolna. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
Nothing funny about any of those. This is a serious episode. My name is Ryan T. Husk. Today, we are doing a review of Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 21 already, The Reckoning, story by Harry Worksman and Gabrielle G. Stanton. There's a little story behind those two. And teleplay by our buddies David Weddle and Bradley Thompson, directed by Jesus Salvador Trevino. This was April 29th, 1998. How you doing today, Sirach?
Doing good. You kind of piqued my interest there with the little story behind that one.
Yeah, already. Oh, do you want to say one more interesting story? Special thanks today to Carolyn Fansler. Thank you very much, Carolyn Fansler.
Thank you, Carolyn.
It's kind of a short story.
Oh, is it?
No, that was it.
Well, look now. Oh, that was the story.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, Jesus Salvador Trevino.
Yes, I remember him. I'm looking his picture up now.
Oh, really? You remember him? I feel like this is only the second time I've mentioned his name. How many times has he directed?
Let me see. I'm not sure about how many times he directed. I do remember him. He's very, had a kind of a Mexican Woody Allen type of approach to directing. I remember how thoughtful and
Nice.
How much energy he put into it. So yeah, that definitely left an impact.
Actually, it looks like this is the third and final time he directed Deep Space Nine. He also directed Sons and Daughters and The Begotten before this. But he did direct five episodes of Voyager in the same time. Those five and the three Deep Space Nine were all between 97 and 98. And he directed five episodes of Babylon 5 from 1995 to 1998. The Voyager episodes, by the way, are Vis-a-Vis, Retrospect, Concerning Flight, Day of Honor, and Fair Trade. So he's done pretty well for himself. And boy, he was directing all the way up to 2010.
Yeah, and in this particular episode, there was a lot of extra, I guess, special effects type of things that were happening with the electricities and the different moments on the station. So I'm sure that was a challenge for him to kind of incorporate into what he was trying to accomplish visually.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like he needed to do that because this was definitely one of those bottle episodes. It's one of those things that Deep Space Nine does so well, which is even the bottle episode leaves a little nugget of story for future episodes. This one is how it ends with the Paw Wraiths and the prophets not finishing their reckoning. And so now it's like, when will they be back? I don't know, but someday, you know, it's one of these things where it's like, you know, it leads into a future episode. And that's what's really cool about even their bottle episodes. I also want to point out, everybody, before we get into it, I'm wearing an awesome shirt by Sirach's sister at AbyssinianKiosk.com. This one is the Cisco Kid design. She's got lots of really cool designs, a lot of Star Trek designs, a lot of Eastern African designs and art. Really cool, not just shirts, all kinds of good stuff. Check that out in the description box below, AbyssinianKiosk.com. Everybody loves her stuff. Her customer service is second to none. That's what everybody talks about. They're like, oh my God, she's so nice. She does all these different designs. She's so cool. Clearly you're adopted. But she's great. We highly recommend.
Yeah, she got a lot of talents that I don't have. So
shout out to her and also like a champ.
I can draw, but she's just really efficient about the graphic design and just her ideas implementing it. She's fantastic. But also she's working on some new stuff. So if you want to check it out and go to the site, there'll be some new designs that she's launching very soon.
Yeah. When? So pretty soon, huh? Okay, cool. Yeah. Let us know when that
happens. If it's not already up there, it's coming within the next few days. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So that's a good thing.
I'm going to take a quick check. Whoa. I do feel like that one looks new. We're going to do a quick share screen so everybody can check it out. If you're listening in, we will describe it. It's cool Star Trek and African stuff. This one looks new to me. No, it's still the Cisco kid though.
No, that's a new one. Yeah, that's a new design.
It's the Cisco kid line, but a new design within it. Wow, that one looks cool. Yeah. Looks a little bit more old school. So everybody at home, it's like black and yellow. It's like the Star Trek insignia within a Star Trek insignia, that which is striped. There's also all kinds of other cool designs that we know and love.
So I have her working on some more new ones. It's coming down.
Whoa, look at this one. That is cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so check that out, abyssiniankiosk.com in the description box below, or type it out. If you don't know how to spell Abyssinian Kiosk, just do what I did. Type it into Google, like general, be like Abyssinia, and then it pops up. You're like, all right, cool. I got it.
Exactly. I totally feel that, because sometimes I find myself just trying to figure it out and just say, I know Google. It'll fix it for me.
Yep.
This was a great episode. It was interesting to me. I like the way they started out with the whole finding this tablet and starting, you know, piquing my interest, like what's going to happen. Little Indiana Jones-ish, you know, with the backstory and the history, 25,000 years ago, 30,000 years ago. So I did like, just right off the top in the beginning, I was like, oh, where is this going to go? This looks interesting.
Yeah, as soon as this episode starts, my first thought is, these are the kind of episodes that I remember not being interested in back in the day. And I remember thinking, but Sarak is, this is definitely his thing. I mean, what's interesting to me is, like, you know, history and hieroglyphs and, you know, that kind of aspect and how it affects culture and the past and all that, you know. And I certainly am more interested in the Bajoran episodes than I remember being when I watched these back in the day. So I can definitely have a better appreciation for it. But I know that these episodes are a little bit more up your alley than mine. I remember when I was back in the day, when I first watched these, I'd be like, oh, another Bajoran episode, huh? I just want to see Jem Hadar and stuff, you know. But now I can actually appreciate them and enjoy them. And I'll be honest, I did not remember this episode until the end, you know, with the lightning battles and all that kind of stuff. Then I was like, oh, I do remember this part now. You know, once they kind of got taken over, then I remembered it. So I don't know if I would just glaze over before when I watched it or what.
Yeah, I knew I was in this episode. I just didn't know to what degree.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forgot about this. I mean, I didn't forget about it because of the makeup and the makeup process that I had to go through, right?
The worms on your, you got all crazy.
I had those wormy veins popping in my face. And so I remember that. And obviously I remember the contact lenses that I had in this episode. I was seeing an ophthalmologist and had to get fitted for these red lenses, which I should have kept, because I mean, they were literally made for me. So it's silly for me not to have kept them, but yeah, it looks creepy.
You know, a word of advice about keeping creepy contact lenses. You think, boy, it might be cool to just kind of wear them out or do whatever, right? Or, you know, maybe Halloween. Let me tell you, back in the day, back I think I was like a freshman in college or something like that. And I remember getting fitted for contact lenses. And they're like, it was something crazy, like for $10 or $20 more, you can get your prescription in these crazy things. Like you could have red eyes or purple eyes or crazy whatever. And so I got it was kind of like these you know, cat or lizard eyes that were like, you know, like a vertical line. It was like basically yellow eyes, but with like, you know, just the line in the middle. So it looked like these crazy cat eyes or lizard eyes. And I was like, how fun, right? And so I put them on and I'm like, yeah, totally worth it. I'm going to go have some fun and be the guy with the weirdo eyes. Who cares, right? Man, you can't live your life. You can't live your life. I'm sitting in a college class and like the teacher's trying to teach. And then somebody next to me is like, oh my God, what's wrong with your eye? Like she's freaking out. And then people are like gasping, you know, cause it's actually like really off-putting and scary. And then somebody behind me was like, what's going on? I turn around and she like kind of screams. She's like, ah, and I'm like, okay, I can't do this. This is not a real, you can't turn it off. Like, when you want to have it on, you know, you're like, hey, cool. Look at these funny eyes. But what about if you're just trying to buy something at the store or sit in class quietly? It doesn't work. So anyway, maybe it's better that you didn't keep them. Because I never wore them after that. I was like, not worth
it. Yeah, it was probably also the fact that they wore the red evil eyes. And I'm like, I don't want to walk around with the evil eyes all the time.
They look pretty cool on you though, man.
Yeah, it was interesting. And, you know, that's the first thing that I thought of once I saw it. I was like, oh, yeah, that was the contact lenses that we picked up. And I forgot where it was, but I think it was far. And and then those veins in my face. So, but I did like a few things. There were moments there that I liked. There were moments, for example, with Odo and Kira, where they started talking like, In the opening of this episode, they were kind of having this banter between each other that is reminiscent of a kind of relationship that has kind of already got some wheels under it, right?
Yeah,
they were going back and forth. Yeah, they were going back and forth where Odo's like, well, will the Romulans leave Benzar? You know, and, you know, he starts to say that the Romulans don't like to leave once they've occupied a place. They don't give it up. And Kira kind of gives a little exchange with him and says, stop being so grumpy, Odo-y. You know, or yeah.
Odo-y. Yeah.
And then he does a thing where dour and suspicious is my nature or something to that effect. So I like that little interchange between them.
And by the way, Benzar is, I'm assuming that is the home planet of the Benzites. And everybody that's watched The Next Generation knows who the Benzites are. They're these guys that are very interesting looking. I forgot what this character's name was in Deep Space Nine. I know there's a lot of Star Trek fans that are yelling out his name right now. Let me see if it says it. Anyway, so God, I can't remember his name. Anyway, so they're cool. They need that breathing apparatus, you know, that because they're planet has, you know, different air and whatever, you know, but they're an interesting race. I liked them a lot. And
they kind of look like seals, like a seal face, right?
Yeah, a kiss from a rose, yeah.
Or an otter. Not that otter.
Yeah, they're interesting. I hope you get it. You know, we've seen a couple of them. There was also, where did we see that? There was also like a female Benzite. And yes. You know what? There was a female Benzite in a previous Deep Space Nine episode, and it was a lady, and she died, you know, like on the Defiant or something. She was like a comms person. And then that lady came back in a recent Deep Space Nine episode that we reviewed. And I don't remember what it was, but we were both impressed by her and we're like, wow, who is she? And she was like really pretty. And then come to find out she was this gross Benzite thing with things out of her face. Ensign like Moda or something like that. Anyway, that's enough about Benzite.
Yeah. Well, everybody knows that the Benzites were established by their first colonizer, Ben Mercedes, right?
That's very true. That's very true. Yeah. And the lady's name was Hoya. Ensign Hoya.
Nice.
Now I got to figure out who she played. Anyway, because now it's killing me.
It's killing you now.
Got it. Hillary Shepherd. And she was the one that played the sultry lady with the four wacky geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this lady?
The wacky genius. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, in the psych ward.
Yeah,
on the psych ward episode.
Exactly. Yeah. And she also played this character here.
Those were the genetically enhanced people, right?
Right, exactly. And she also played this character, so that's why we... Anyway.
Yeah, that's not a flattering picture of her.
No, don't get me started on crazy Star Trek aliens, because I go deep. Anyway, let's move on. Plus, I'll be honest, spring has sprung and allergies have kicked my bung today.
Oh, really?
I feel like somebody just poured pollen on my eyeballs while I was sleeping. They're killing me right now. You don't get allergies, huh?
A little bit. Yeah, I do.
Anyway, so sorry, I sidetracked us here. Odo and Kira are now basically showing that they're not feeling each other out. Let's have a second date. Let's see what happens. They've just gone full blown into it, and they know each other. They know each other's mannerisms and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a nice little interaction between the two of them. The Sisko, I love it when they call Captain Sisko the Sisko.
Yes.
It's one of my favorite things. And I'm going to have to tell my sister about making a shirt with the Sisko on it.
Yeah.
That hasn't been done yet from what I think. And I do like that. I like those moments when the aliens are that, you know, surrounding him.
If I can make some,
Sisko will know.
If I can make some suggestions after the Sisko, also the emissary would be a good line. I also think a line called Joseph would be cool. Joseph Sisko, just Joseph, and it would have like Creole or Cajun, I think it's Creole, some kind of Creole type design or something reminiscent, you know, like a crawfish or, you know, just something kind of cool and historical and cultural there might be really fun.
Maybe like Joseph's Creole Kitchen or something like that, like it's a restaurant kind of advertisement.
Right now, your sister's going, tell you what, when you guys open your own store, you can go ahead and come up with all these wild
things. Yeah, I do that to my sister. She's like, you know how much work is involved in all that
stuff? It's
like,
not that easy.
I know. But the Sisko, you know, and I like that. But I didn't, I don't know. As soon as I see Kai Wynn's face, my whole demeanor changes. Like, I'm like, oh. God, here she is again.
Like, I love it so much. And I know that when I'm watching these episodes, there are two things, there are two characters where I immediately think of you as soon as they pop on. One is Wei-Yun. As soon as Wei-Yun pops in, I'm like, oop, Sirach just leaned forward in his seat, you know? As soon as Kai Wynn shows up or is mentioned, he's like, oh, I'm going to need a snack to get through this.
As soon as I see her, oh God, my child. Her arrogance is just so, it's just overwhelming. And, you know, and her jealousy of Sisko is another thing that's just like, you just unbearable, because it's like, he's not even competing with her. Or, you know, trying to compete with her, but she is so in competition with him. Mm-hmm. And those one-way competition relationships are the most awkward for me. It's like, it's so awkward when somebody's competing against you that you're not competing against them.
I think that's the best way. I know exactly what you mean. A one-way competition. That is a perfect way to describe it. And those people, you want to just be like, hey, you win. What do you want? You win. Okay. What do you want me to say? Here, have.
You're better than me. You're better than me. You're cooler than me. You got a better car than me. Whatever it is that you made a bow down to.
Great job. Yeah. Move on.
It's crazy. And a lot of that happens too within families, you know, sibling competitions. It happens even within families, you know. It's like, dude, I'm not even competing against you, but but somebody's competing against you. So it happens a lot. And when I see it with Kai Winn and Cisco, I'm thinking to myself, he doesn't even want to be the emissary. He's literally, you know, he's just literally saying, you take all the power. It's all you. Don't bother me with it. But every once in a while, you know, I might want to flex my emissary power.
Hey, emissary got to do what the emissary got to do. And you need to back off.
And that was one of my things. I actually felt, and it pains me to say this, but I thought that Kai Winn had a legitimate argument when she said that you removed this artifact without permission from Bajor. That is a legitimate grievance that I believe she, for the first time, I had to kind of agree with her perspective on something.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the same thing. Like when she was going to come up and say stuff, you know, you're thinking, all right, this woman's got the personality of a sour cream sandwich. And then she said that, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good point. They just basically stole a valuable artifact. And his reasoning was what? Basically, oh, I didn't think you'd mind. Like, it wasn't even like, oh, I got permission from the government. He's like, I just figured that, you know, my grandfather used to say, figures don't lie, but liars figure. And so when somebody goes like, oh, I just figured that you wouldn't mind. Big deal.
That's a good one. Figures don't lie, but liars figure. I like that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was that. He took it upon himself to kind of make that decision, and it reminded me of other instances in which that's occurred in the past, specifically with ancient, you know, Egyptian archaeological treasures that belong to the country.
Yeah.
And in Ethiopia, certain artifacts were removed from the country and put on display in museums, you know, around the world. And Ethiopia, as a matter of fact, had to made a written request to get some of these things back. Italy was in possession of this kind of a monolithic tower type pillar that it just stole. It hijacked from the country. And
really?
Yeah, and this thing is a huge, tall stone pillar, right? That's probably, sorry. It's a huge pillar that's like, I would say 100 feet in the air.
Wow. Well,
yeah. So what they did was they chopped it up into three pieces and took it to Italy and erected it there. So they took it, chopped it into three pieces and helicoptered it out of Ethiopia and erected it in some plaza in Italy. And many years later, through writing and making certain kind of government negotiations, we were finally able to get this thing back. But this is a common occurrence from, you know, archaeologists and so-called people looking for artifacts. They'll just take it.
Yeah, I remember hearing Egyptians say, like Egyptian archaeologists, basically about like the pyramids and the ruins, that they're like, yes, you know, these ruins are for the world. We want the world to learn this. We want the world to be a part of this. We want all blah, 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 blah. However, this is still in Egypt. These are still Egyptian artifacts. This is still should be an Egyptian led situation. You know, there was just something there where they're like, yes, yes, yes. But can we still keep Egyptian stuff Egyptian? You know, it's kind of like, you know, I know these are coming from the archaeologists, like the actual scientists that are doing this and all that. And it made sense. Also, we got to go to our break real quick. But I do want to point out that the one way competition with Jake Cisco, everybody knows it, Molly. Molly was always out to get him, and we're sick of it. Molly, Rumpelstiltskin, Maya. Anyway, all right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back on the other side on the seventh rule.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, seriously, Molly. So, hey, welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Siroc Lofton.
Hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk. And everybody's like, sounds more like Ryan's got the one-way competition with Molly than Molly with Jake. Okay, so this is Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 21, The Reckoning. Very quickly, here are the trivioids coming your way. There are some interesting ones. The Dominion has solidified its hold on the Calandra sector. The Romulans have forced the Dominion to retreat from the Benzar system. As you mentioned, the archaeologists excavating Bahala have found something, something they want the emissary to see. Dax is going to think of the prophets as wormhole aliens. Bashir says, if you look hard enough, you'll find a Bajoran prophecy for anything. Usually Kira eats with such gusto. There's been flooding in the Rakantha province. An earthquake hit the Kendra Valley and a tornado struck Tamulna.
I wish I was a Bahala.
I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was Bahala. That's very good. Very nice.
That was a good one. The other thing that I really liked about this episode, we touched a little bit about Kai Winn and her purpose, but I thought there were some good moments between Jake and his dad in this, specifically when Jake comes up to him and he's like, I keep seeing you on a hospital bed waiting for you to wake up.
Yeah.
And that kind of brought us back to The Visitor, brought us back to episodes where, we've seen Jake looking down at his father, like waiting for him to come back.
Or the other Bahala episode where Captain Sisko gets zapped and then he's having these visions, he's on the bed.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I thought that was a great moment between the father and son. And I think there was something that he says, I didn't ask to be the emissary, but for better or worse, I guess that's what I am, except for being your dad. And then that was the way he said it was just a great moment. He gives me a big hug, kiss, and that was a little special moment that I think is indicative of the family father-son relationship, that special little conversation where you're able to open up and just kind of let some things off that are personal to you. And then and being able to be received, right? Somebody listening to you, processing what you're saying and giving you a hug and saying, don't worry, everything's going to be all right. I think those are family moments that we all cherish.
Which is why the Sisko's one for favorite Star Trek family, or legacy family, I should say, because of moments like that. It's always positive. It's always wholesome. They still have conflict all the time. Obviously, they have to have conflict, but it's always handled well. It always comes from a place of love. Sisko, Captain Sisko, is always such a good father. He knows where his priorities lie. He does do that lean in and kiss on the head always, that I know was an Avery choice, and it really turns it from TV dad and TV son to real dad and son to us, to the viewers. It just makes it feel real, And I love those moments. The one thing I didn't like about that is it's the middle of the night and, Jake gets up because he can't sleep or something like that. They've got poor Jake sleeping in a vest. Like, let the kid let him come out in a t-shirt for God. Relax.
It's my pajama vest. I had some wingtips on too. It was crazy. What a pajama outfit. I I go to bed like Hugh Hefner, the robe and the pipe were in the other room too.
In style.
In style. Yeah, that was interesting.
It's my rest vest.
It's my rest in vest. But yeah, there's moments there that are great. And going back to the Kira Odo thing, when Kira says something to her, Odo, like, Odo, you lack faith. Mm-hmm. And he does the smooth, like, transition kind of move where he says, but not in you, right?
Hey.
Like, I have faith, but only in you. I love that line right there. It was special.
I wonder if Worf taught him that line. Because remember a few episodes ago, he was like, I'd rather lose betting on you than win, or whatever he said. He's like, hey, yeah. Odo, I got something for you. Tell her this.
Might have been. Also love the way Sisko's like, he hits Odo with a please don't patronize me. You know, when they're like, we believe you. Yeah, we believe that you saw visions. And sure, you needed to break the tablet. Of course.
Yeah.
And when he did break the tablet, I'm thinking, what the hell is he doing, man? Why did he do that?
Hmm.
So, you know, the story flowed for me pretty well.
Yeah, it was. Oh, and so we'll talk about the story a little bit. Now the story by Harry Worksman and Gabriel G. Stanton.
Yeah.
Earlier I mentioned that there was like a little story behind that. And by story, I just mean something weird. That on IMDb, it says Harry Worksman, but parenthetically, you know, which means he changed his name as Harry M. Worksman. So he had the M before, but took it away on IMDb or whatever, or later on. Then you have Gabriel G. Stanton, and then parenthetically as Gabriel Stanton. So basically what you have is initially Harry used his middle initial and Gabrielle didn't. And then they both switched. He took out the middle initial and she added the middle in it. And I'm just like, this is just, I don't understand what this means, if anything, but they're like, he's, you know, maybe he was like, all right, I'm taking out the middle initial. And she's like, well, then I got to add one. We can't have somebody with no middle, or maybe she wanted to add it. He's like, well, only one of us can have a middle initial. So I'm switching back to no. I don't know. It's not really a story, just something that I thought was weird.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. We also got the teleplay by our favorite guys, David Weddle and Bradley Thompson. So they're
right.
Always kicking in. And we should get them on one day. We'd love to talk to them.
Me too.
Love to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Because sure they became... They were like story editors for the entire like sixth and seventh season or something like that. And they've got all these episodes that they wrote. Looks like the tag team of Harry and Gabrielle only wrote one episode of Star Trek, and that was this one. Although they did write a documentary called Star Trek, A Captain's Log in 1994, and another documentary called William Shatner's Star Trek Memories in 1995. So that's interesting.
Hmm. So they did more documentaries than episodes, which is interesting.
Yeah, but Bradley Thompson and David Weddle, I mean, as we know, they were story editors for the two seasons. And now they're working on For All Mankind, which is the big show on Apple TV by Ronald D. Moore, which is great. And how many episodes do they actually write for Deep Space Nine? It looks like 11 that they wrote, one plus one story by, and 25 episodes as executive story editor. So I would love to have them on the show too, man. Fun to talk to them.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got a whole bunch of stories that we haven't heard and special little nuggets that might be interesting. I don't know. The only thing that I really was pissed off about in this episode, and you know, was the fact that Kai Winn could essentially claim as that she saved my life, right? And I was like, if anybody was going to save my life, I hate that I'd have to be somehow indebted to Kai Winn. Yeah.
That's a good point.
It's kind of sucked.
Yeah.
I was thinking, oh, God, why is it her? Why is it her? It could be anybody else.
Even take Ducat.
Even Ducat I would take. And Wei Yun could save me. But, gosh, she's going to, I'm going to have to, you know, kiss ass every time I see her. Like, thanks, Kai.
And she's like, my child, it's Auntie Kai now.
Right.
Just Kai's fine.
No, just Kai. But you know, one of the things that was really a big topic of this was faith, right? So it was a lot about faith. Just when Sisko broke the tablets, he said, I was just compelled to do it, right? It was just like a faith type of thing. Like, it was just
right.
I wasn't sure why, but I was compelled to do that. And the, you know, the faith conversation with Odo and Kira, another bringing that up. Kai Winn's faith, which is seems more on the surface than deep, but I don't want to question how deep her beliefs are. But a lot of it seems like, I think what Sisko said to her is like, she said, we're praying, my child, we're praying that the spirit wins or whatever, the prophet wins. And Sisko's like, yeah, they can hear your prayers
anywhere.
From over there. Yeah.
So,
so get the hell out of here. And he actually got mad. He was like, get out of here. That's an order. He told him to really literally get the hell out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea about this particular thing, because, you know, Odo was willing to sacrifice Kira. He says that's what she would have wanted. I know, you know, we've had conversations. She would have definitely wanted to be a vessel for this thing. But it seemed as though she was a willing participant type vessel, right? So Kira was like, yes, given the opportunity to have the 1,000-year golden age of Bajor, I'm willing to help this spirit thing possess me and use me as a vessel.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't explain how the Jake's becoming this vessel, because he wasn't necessarily a willing vessel, right? I mean,
definitely right. doesn't seem like he would sign up for that.
Yeah, who would sign up for that, right?
They gave throwaway line about,
yes,
you know, like,
yes, yes.
Once he was inhabited, he understood that, you know, he'd be willing to die. It was important enough that, you know, he'd be willing to die for it. But yeah, that doesn't mean that he wanted to take it on in the first place. You might be like, whoa, energy right. stuff. I'm just trying to get out of this station right now.
Yeah. You want me to sign where? No, I'm not willing. I'm not.
No deal.
No deal. So they didn't explain that, but ultimately what I'm bringing it up for is to say that the idea of this story is a biblical story. It is the actual, it is the story of Abraham going up to the mountain to sacrifice his child. Hmm. And then God intervenes and says, now I see that you were willing to do it. That's enough for me. And then blesses Abraham. And that's the beginning, essentially, of the whole Abrahamic dynasty and everything that comes from it, which is Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, are all essentially refer to the God of Abraham. And that exchange comes from this sacrifice on the mountain where Abraham was going to bring his child, his son, and sacrifice his own son for the will of God, or for God. And so that story I saw kind of,
You know, I heard that it wasn't a mountain, though. I heard it was Faith Hill is what they called the thing that he went on. Anyway, let's pretend I didn't say that.
No, that's all right. We'll say that, but But so, yeah, that's the story. That's the backstory on it. It's a little bit of the biblical story about sacrifice. And you see that Sisko was willing to make that sacrifice. Jake was willing to himself to even make a sacrifice. Kira is willing to make that sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially what it is, it goes back to this this biblical story in the Old Testament about Abraham making this sacrifice. And God kind of intervening and saying, no, you don't have to sacrifice your son. You can do the lamb instead. And I think that was the beginning of this kind of non-human sacrifice phase in historical perspective.
You know, real quick, that does remind me, with regards to faith, Major Kira had that great line to Kai Wynn at the end. She says, I think you're confusing faith with ambition. And yeah, and I really like that. I was like,
yes,
that's Kai Wynn in a nutshell right there, right?
Yes. And you know what? Kira surprisingly has, she has this ability to like walk the line, to thread this needle about how she interacts with Kai, right? She shows her a certain amount of respect, but then she also like will throw some punches here and there and let them land. And then we'll kind of, you know, step back and say, yeah, I said it. That's right. I said it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a very good match for the energy that Kai brings.
Speaking of energy, I can't be the only one that noticed like the similarities between when Kira, remember when Kira, like when she first had her change, right? And it totally mm-hmm. reminded me of Ghostbusters. She looked like, you know, where Sigourney Weaver says, there is no Dana, only Zool, right? And okay. Maybe I'm the only one, but I swear, as soon as I saw her, I was like, whoa, she reminds me of like when, you know, that scene where, well, maybe not.
Where Sigourney Weaver gets possessed.
Yeah, right. And she's like, there is no Dana, only Zool. And then there was also the other thing that it reminded me of, same thing, was the lady that zaps them called, I think she was like Gozer or something in Ghostbusters. And she like uses her, she zaps out these laser beams at them, right? When she says like, are you a god? And they're like, I think Dan Aykroyd's character says no. And she goes, then die. Anyway. Whatever. That's look, it was this lady, but it totally, as soon as she did that, she reminded me of this lady who was zapping them with the laser beams and stuff. But you're the one with the red eyes, she had the blue ones.
No, but I know what you mean. And actually that was one of the things that reminded me of this episode, was kind of this era of of movie making, and had these kinds of scenes in it, right? This reminded me of one of those kind of movies where it's like the showdown between the good and bad, and the blue energy versus the red energy.
Totally.
It was completely indicative of a cookie cutter type of storytelling that had been done during this particular time period, where, you know, you would have that Ghostbusters type of look, and, you know, or I thought of,
and red was always bad. Red was always bad. Red, good red. Was blue or green. You know, like Star Wars, it's like, you know, green or blue lightsabers. Red is the bad ones. Yeah.
Yeah. So the movie The Last Dragon was Shonuf. You remember fighting Bruce Leroy, and it was the red, you know, sing my name, Shonuf, and he had the red electricity coming out.
Oh.
So there was these kinds of movies that were in the 80s and 90s where you would see these kinds of themes. And so it just reminded me of that. A little bit cheesy to some degree, but, you know, it was that time period.
You know, also one other thing that I almost forgot to mention is, and by the way, for my money, Ghostbusters is the most quotable movie of all time. That's half the time, all I'm doing is quoting Ghostbusters. That's it. But those old VHS tapes of Ghostbusters. So we had a biggest moment, like, you know, funniest moment or big. This was the hardest punch I've ever seen Cisco throw. And he did it to your shoulder. Did you notice that? Like, when you guys were talking, he hits you. And I was like, that was the hardest punch. Like, he really, and I'm thinking, how many takes did they have to do that? Because I think after one or two, you'd be like, all right. It was like a real, I think he might've done it. Like, by now you're, you know, 17, 18, whatever, you know, you can take it,
yeah.
But he probably said something like, hey, I'm going to really give it to you. And you're probably thinking, you're like, all right, I can do it. Because he didn't give a father to son punch in the shoulder. He gave a man to man punch in the shoulder. I was like, wow, you got to go back and see it. I was like, whoa, that was the real deal, man.
Yeah. But by this point we had been, that was our thing a little bit. Like he would do that a lot if it wasn't even in the episode. I mean, he would just kind of punch me sometimes. Right. And I would, of course, fall to the floor and act like I was about to die if we were off camera. And the crew would be like, man, I think you heard him, man. I think you heard him this time. So Rock, you all right? So it was kind of a ongoing little thing between us, this punch that looked worse than it was. And of course I would just add to it. But he had a way of like throwing good punches. He definitely had it. He has boxer skills when it comes to throwing punches.
Oh, really?
And, careful. Yeah. So he could have hurt me if he wanted to, but no. He also knew how to make it sound loud when it wasn't really that hurtful. It just sounded like it hurt. So that was one of our little things back and forth. So, you know, I was used to him punching me by this point.
Man, it was the real deal, man. It's the real deal, Holyfield, man. I was a little surprised by it, but I'm sure. And it might have been something to where, you know, sometimes an actor does something a little extra to the other actor to get some kind of genuine response. It might have been something to where he's like, he put in a little extra to try to get, you know, to get some kind of genuine response rather than just whatever's already planned or whatever's written in the script.
Where was that? What point was that? Because I don't even remember seeing that. What point in the episode was that?
I think it was when you woke up in your rest vest and came at him. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
In the rest vest. So it was during the. It was just before the scene. Where he says, I didn't ask to be the emissary. Is that scene?
Yeah, I think so. Might have been another scene, but I'll try to find it. If I can't find it right now, I'll pull it up for the free for all in a couple minutes.
Yeah, I didn't remember seeing that. I mean, I'd like to see it because it would remind me of those.
There it was. There it was. Hang on. All right. I'm going to pull it up in a second. Let's see. Right. Here it comes. This is on Paramount Plus, everybody.
For being your dad.
Watch this. Teach him a lesson.
Except for being your dad.
Teach him a lesson. Give it to him. Okay, maybe that wasn't as hard as I thought on first glance. but
that's called a pop shot right there when you're somebody's in close and you get in with it. He didn't reach back and give you the full swing. It was it's like when you're tied up in the fight and you get him, you just got to get him with a little quick pop shot,
little jab.
Yeah, that's the pop shot. Pops
from the pops, yeah.
From the pops, Papa's pop shot. So yeah, no, he those were all just love taps, as he always did.
I never thought that I'd see the day where Jake Sisko's saying, "Oh yeah, Captain Sisko used to punch me off camera," and every once in a while he'd sneak one in on camera too. You know, whatever. It's out of love.
It's a love tap. These were love taps. I mean, my friends and I used to play a game called chess, where you just basically, you know, one person stands there and you make your chest as hard as you can and flex it and flex your stomach. And then somebody punches you in the chest and you get to punch them back in the chest. So
no, that's fun as shit, though.
Yeah, we'd play chess. And then eventually you're like, all right, that's enough. I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually somebody's like, all right. Yeah. I need to take a minute. Take a break. Yeah. We'll play again tomorrow.
Take a break. Yeah. So this was not uncommon for me to be playing like little punchy games and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was used to it.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left here. I do want to mention there was a Mourne sighting when the promenade or whatever was shaking. I do think that the memorable moment of this episode is when Kira and Jake have their face off of red and blue, you know, fire lasers. And that's the memorable thing. Like if you say, do you remember the episode, The Reckoning? I'm sure Star Trek fans will be like, oh, is that the one where they had the showdown, you know, like in the hallway? That was pretty cool. You know, it's definitely something we've never seen in Deep Space Nine, is something like that. So that's the immediately memorable moment. I think that was the one that really stood out to me. Yeah. We also had three non-appearance mentions, although we can save those for the free for all, three NAMs. Any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah. How did this thing do on the IMDb? What was the rating?
Well, Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I'm going to say 7.5, 7.5. That's my guess.
Okay. That is an interesting guess. So everybody at home, stay tuned to find out what the answer is to the IMDb rating, and stay tuned to find out what the NAMs are, and stick around because, you know, it's the free for all. It's a lot of fun. We have our associate producers join us. It's a great time. Speaking of which, let's give a very special thanks to our friends, Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet TJ, Jackson Bay out in Missouri.
Bay.
Yvette Blackman, Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy, Eve England out in Wales, Dr. Anne Marie Seagull, Tim Baum, a.k.a. Grandpa One, Mr. Titus Muller, Darlena Marie, John Mann, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Joe Balsarati, Tierney C. Diekman, Ryan Galloway, Christopher Collins, Erica Strom, Amy Renee Haynes, and of course, Dr. Susan V. Gruner. We'll be right back. All right. Bill Victor Arukin. You were watching with such a suspicious eye. All right. So we'll be right back on the other side. Stick around. Always remember the seventh rule.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and
conditions. 18+. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the free-for-all for the seventh rule, featuring our heroic hosts, Sirach Lofton and Ryan T. Husk. Woo!
Yeah.
Also featuring today, Anna Post, Guldu Scott, Eve England, parentheses out in Wales, Homer Frizzell, Ryan Galloway, Tierney C. Diekman, parentheses Borg Queen, Susan V. Gruner, TJ Jackson Bay, Erica Strom, I hope I pronounced that right, Melissa Longo, and I'm Muhammad Noor.
Nailed it. Nailed it.
Way to do it.
It. A plus. Blended.
Well done, my child.
Actually,
the Duke of Nor.
Erica, can you give me, can you give us a well done, my child? Oh.
Oh, no, we can't hear you, Ren.
I win.
Yeah.
But she did say, may the prophets be with you.
There we go.
Kaiopaka.
Kaiopaka.
That's nice. True. Right, yes. Right, right, right. Yeah. Perfect. Okay. So, very quickly, we have two orders of business. Number one is Sirach today, sorry, Jake Sisko today guessed the IMDb score was a 7.5. You guys have any guesses that haven't already seen it? Or that don't already know what it is, I should say.
7.9?
7.4. I was 7.7.
Wow. 7.5, so we can have them all. Yeah. One of us is right.
All right.
One.
I'm going to give it a 10.
It's a 10.
Very close.
We all give it a 10.
And Anne-Marie? Anne-Marie, are you here?
Yeah.
I give it a 15. This is the Sirach Lawson episode.
Yeah, it is.
All right. The person that came the closest without actually going over is Tierney C. Diekman. It is, in fact, a 7.1. Exactly.
Wow.
I don't win.
Everybody guessed all sevens, the whole gamut of sevens on that one.
Yeah. 10.
Now, the other piece of information there is the non-appearance mentions. We had three NAMs today, three people that were named and mentioned, but were not in the episode.
Shakar.
Mm-hmm. Shakar. They finally agreed on something.
You're right. That's one.
I heard Martok.
Yes. Times. Very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't have the third one, though.
O'Brien wasn't in the episode, but I don't remember if he was mentioned.
I don't think he was mentioned. I don't know if he was.
I'm not sure.
Brian's not saying anything, so I'm assuming.
If so, that's not the one that I put. I don't think he was mentioned, but yeah, I didn't even notice he wasn't there.
Well, Keiko's always the one that's mentioned and not there.
Yeah, but not this time. Not that I caught, at least. It was Admiral Ross.
Oh, Admiral right.
Ross. Not catch that at all.
I think that's his very first non-appearance mention. All right. Now that we have bored everybody to tears. all right. Anybody have any thoughts on this episode? Let's start with Melissa Longo today, who's wearing a very cool shirt and apropos.
Yes, it's under my cat. first, I want to say this episode made me want to Bahala. I enjoy this episode very much because of the questions it raises, and I love how Deep Space Nine sometimes sometimes plays toys with the idea of faith and science coexisting together and working together and not giving you an answer as to which one is the correct way, because how could we know? I mean, it would be arrogant to assume that we would have all these answers. And I love this Kira, Prophecy Kira, and it reminds me of the Zool from the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, see, Sirach, I'm not the only one. I mentioned that.
There's no Kira,
right?
Only Zool.
You did say that.
Who else got that? Who else thought of that?
Probably a different link.
Very nice. Very nice. Good
but
work.
I knew
Melissa.
Something was familiar, but couldn't remember where.
Only Zool. She just needed to fly in the air. But I was a little disappointed by Dax's lack of imagination with regards to the wormhole aliens. Whether she believes they are gods or not doesn't discount the fact that they've managed to do some things that not corporeal beings are not capable of. Mm-hmm. And being a scientist, knowing and being a scientist and knowing that other species that are not corporeal exist in the universe, why would that be out of the realm of science? So that kind of disappointed me a little bit, because Dax has always been so open-minded, you know, about the universe. And and I like the part that I noticed that Kira was eating a plate of human fruit, and that human fruit, but it kind of was ironic that the prophecy said that the Bajorans would either suffer terribly or eat fruit, and Kira was eating fruit. So
there you go.
Yeah. But there's many other things that I wrote down, but Mochi is distracting, so
she's perched.
She's not going anywhere. Well, maybe.
Very good points. Mm-hmm. Very good points, Melissa. Especially the Dax thing. I thought that was unusual. I think Muhammad was mentioning that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems a little bit like too. She's just not willing to kind of, you know, adjust to what was happening at the moment. She was
right
a little blasé about it. Maybe channel a little Curzon, maybe.
Yeah, borderline grumpy.
Curmudgeonly.
And then whether or not you believe that they're gods or not, the founders, the Dominion, were able to create a whole sentient species, you know. So that isn't beyond the realm of possibility either, you know, that they are there to help and work with the Bajorans for whatever reason. And even the prophets may not know what that reason is, but that is their purpose in their existence.
Mm-hmm. Okay, final image on Ghostbusters and how it was just I'm like, fun, right? This was totally
yes! her, right?
Yeah. It was totally her. I loved it.
But didn't they just totally rip off, or Harry Potter took the jewel, the wand jewel, and Harry Potter totally ripped off that scene? It was just like the wand battle at the end with the blue and the red.
Which movie?
Harry Potter.
But which,
were
which?
They?
The final.
I think it's the one with Voldemort, and they have the two colors going together, and they sort of meet in the middle, and you have the bit where it then starts moving from Voldemort to Harry and vice versa.
Mm.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's just that. It just reminded me totally of that.
Yeah. Well, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, your thoughts?
My child. I thought this episode was pretty nice. It was nice to kind of get a break from we had elements of the Dominion story, but the focus was back, you know, to the station Bajor and, you know, the people in their lives and the kind of conflicts from, you know, seasons ago. We got, you know, Kai Winn is there, we got prophet stuff going on.
Yep.
Pares and the Costamogen. And so I thought it was nice to revisit those themes from the major story arc. And I think I mentioned before, you know, we got a lot of Sirach Lofton in this episode, so that's always a plus. As a matter of fact, when I started watching it, I was like, there's one where he has red eyes, and I was like, this is it. Yeah. So
finally.
I was excited. Yeah, I was excited. We're finally at this one. And, you know, I thought it was also the way that conflict ended was interesting with Kai Wynn, you know, being the one that throws the switch. And, you know, knowing that, you know, while that did save some lives and maybe the station, that her motive isn't exactly pure, because she mentioned that, you know, if the prophets win, you won't even need a Kai anymore.
Exactly.
Like, so right. She's like, wait a minute, yeah. Wait a minute. Like, I need a job. So I don't need
job security.
So, you know, how Kai Wynn of her.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Dr. Susan B. Gruner, do you agree with that, or do you take the other side of that argument, whatever that might be?
No, I love it when they bring Louise Fletcher on. She is just incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to literally punch her in the face. She yep. plays such a great part with that character. It's unbelievable. Yep. And I love... Question for Sirach. Did you have to wear some kind of red contacts, or is that CGI?
No, they just rolled up some joints for me and just hey.
Zing, zing.
Stay in your trailer a little longer. Yeah.
Or both.
No, I did. I did. I had to see an optometrist or whatever, and they sized me up for those color lenses. And they were extra big, so they weren't just the size of your pupil.
Yeah, those were half sclera, weren't they? They were huge.
They were huge, and they were that made it uncomfortable to wear because it was literally the size of your whole eye. And
I've worn those. They're not fun.
They're not fun to wear. They're difficult to get in, and they do irritate it. They're irritating.
I wondered about that.
Yeah.
I could never.
I would have liked the tiny ones. I would have liked the tinier ones. And they had all kinds of cool ones when I went to the doctor to get them fitted. But, you know, the cat ones and the different kinds of glow in the dark ones. They had a whole kind of.
Glow in the dark.
Yeah, they had a bunch
that's
of
stuff. Fine.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I wasn't comfortable wearing those big old contacts. They were huge.
Mm-hmm.
It kept drying. Drying out. You have to keep lubricating them. Yeah.
Sue, no contacts for you ever, huh?
Never. I have a thing about poking, putting anything in my eye. I just.
You're missing out.
No. Yeah, no, because then I get to buy cool glasses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For reading only. I only need them for reading. But yeah. Anyway, I wondered if they were painful and yeah. It was kind of cool to see you. With that, the Costimogen with
that
Kira.
Awesome. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not so innocent anymore.
played a pretty intimidating paw wraith. That's for sure.
Yeah. thank you. Awesome. Well, and you know what is funny? Because when I was watching, I was like, Kira's character says, I'm waiting for the evil paw wraith to find a host, right? And I'll just, I guess was just standing there waiting because it kind of shut down like the robot on that one show, Small Wonder. But like Vicky from Small Wonder. Yeah, you remember? So Kira says, yeah, I'm going to just stand here and wait until the evil one finds a thing. And you would think that Sisko would have kind of been trying to guess who the next, like who that would be, right?
Right.
Well,
that they were evacuating everybody off of the ship. Who's left for it to inhabit, really?
Well, and then there was you and Kira were the only other two in the caves with Sisko, so it makes sense that
I didn't pick that up. Connection.
And those were the three that were the prophets when he had his vision too, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Latches on.
Interesting.
Those prophets were funny. I kept noticing now they just go, I'm gonna say a phrase, and then they walk away, and then the other one's like, And now I say something. And then they walk away. And they just kept walking away.
They just like screwed with the Orioles.
Yeah.
And so, Benjamin always says, I don't understand.
Yeah. See, right. See, the prophets can only muster up one sentence at a time. They don't speak in full paragraphs.
Even like phrases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like diving birds.
But speaking of cool glasses, you know who's next? Tierney C. Diekman.
What up?
Our cool glasses.
And Scott, your glasses are cool too, by the way.
Thank you, Ryan.
And so are Eve.
And so is TJ.
So
we all have cool glasses.
Glasses, Dick.
Comes from reading books.
Had you seen this episode recently, Tierney?
Yeah, yes, I have indeed. And that fight on the promenade, I can't help but think of, you know, this week on Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, right.
And we've got Louise Fletcher as the wonderful Kai Ratchet. And I do love the episodes with her because they bring out all of those emotions of, God, she's good in this role, because I just want to punt her off the top of the promenade. Just it's speaking of that, there is this moment. So Sirak, you come out and you do your thing, you know, let it begin. And you've got your big red contacts in, but you're on the second level. And then commercial break happens, and we just cut to you on the first down. Level. Did you just pop it, or did they just politely wait for you to walk and, you know, come down to the second level to begin this fight? It's great. I love it. I just imagine you grab it and gymnastics flip over.
No, I took the steps at Quark's Bar and gently walked out.
Menacingly spiral down that stair.
Yeah,
I slid down the banister.
It was a fun, loving party.
I could definitely see the possessed Jake Sisko slowly sauntering down the steps,
right?
Through Quark's Bar, grabbing someone's drink, shooting it, walks a little slower.
And then just slamming the glass down.
Just flying over the handrail like a vampire.
Yeah.
Landing.
Yeah.
He was doing all kinds of other X-Men stuff. So.
Yeah, they could have done some really fun stuff with evil Jake, you know, possessed Jake, as opposed to just that staring fight of you and Nana doing over and over and all of this stuff that they had to do in post. Like, they could have had so much fun with it, but
Keiko got, right? Keiko got that.
Yeah, she, yeah. God, poor Keiko, poor O'Brien. God, the O'Briens just get over and over. It's not just Miles must suffer, the O'Briens must suffer. I don't know, but anyway, so you've got that, and then you've got Kai Winn with this, and there is something. So she comes in and she says, for the very first time, we're hearing, well, the prophets have never spoken to me. And that it seems a little contrived, just like we have Waltz with Dukat, which is, we know how great that episode is. But they pull this kind of plot point, a sort of heavy plot point. I mean, she is the spiritual leader of Bajor, and the prophets have never spoken to her. And I don't know if there's any sort of screening process for this when you become the spiritual leader of Bajor, if you can prove this. I mean, are there Bajorans going around faking that they've spoken to the prophets? Like, when your gods and your ghouls are physical, well, not physical, I guess, living entities, there's a lot of up and downs with your religion there. I must have a mental stack of notes this thick that I won't go into, but so that they pull this thing out for, it almost feels a little forced to progress the season. It's necessary and it's a really good thing, but it kind of feels like one of those things that you can read way into it, just like we can with Waltz, but it's a little out of nowhere feeling. It works. it works well, and it makes sense for Wynn very much, and great for incoming of the power rates. But I won't go further into that. I do have a question for you, Serac, though. So you yourself are a very thoughtful guy with basically everything you've talked about. But then you have your character is Jake, and occasionally they write him in a way as much more superficial than I think the character deserves to be, such as you're in the caves with them and, oh, what about, you know, I don't care about these dumb ruins and I just want my story. Or even in, what is it, Nor Something Without Honor in the Bashir episode, where you're in a combat situation and it starts
Nor with a similar to the thing. Strong, I think, right? Something like that.
Something I have it written down somewhere, but yeah, where that, and you've learned from that, but then they still have you in this kind of superficial sense. Did that writing bother you that they wrote you superficially sometimes when you never came off as needing to be a superficial character, especially not with Sisko as your father? You were always seemingly raised by him as very thoughtful, just as you are as an actual person. So I don't know, for me personally as a viewer, it bothered me. It didn't seem real, like coming from you of, you know, well, I'm down here with some dumb ruins. It didn't seem right.
Yeah. I was a little bothered by that too as I was watching it. It seemed to come out of nowhere. Like if you didn't want to go, then you wouldn't go it to begin with, for example, you know. If you didn't think there was a story there, or if you weren't interested enough by the circumstances or the events of discovering this stuff. So I did think it was a little kind of too easy of a writing decision to just be like, oh, I don't want to be here. This is, you know, are we there yet? You know, this better be good. Those kinds of ways to approach a story, as opposed to maybe Jake would have had too many questions about stuff that you know, because as a writer, he'd be like, so what is this? What's that? Where are we going?
Right. You know, true.
And be asking too many questions where it's like, hey, look, just let's figure it out first and just hold their questions till we actually get there. I think he'd be more inquisitive than that, as opposed to dismissive about, yeah, you know, this is not good enough for me. We're, you know, there's not enough action down here. So yeah, I agree with you in the writing in that particular scene. I thought was poorly done and kind of more stereotypical of the reluctant character that doesn't want to be there. I think they overplayed that element too hard.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they did that too often sometimes and didn't grow you well enough as the character you actually were, and used you a little bit too much as a tool rather than what you should have been. And that's visible. I mean, so we have the imaginings of the character you are and had the potential to be. So we see that. And yeah, it's personally bothersome of, like, anytime we watch it, of just the things they could have done for Jake. And it's like, there's got to be some bothersome of that. So thank you.
Anyway. Yeah, interesting. Nice. On a Post is in a very interesting place, by the way. How you doing? Have you seen this episode recently?
A couple months ago, I think. I do like this one. I like the Care Bear stare battle. So just commenting briefly on a couple of things that other people have mentioned. I think the O'Briens have to suffer, because if any couple stays together on Star Trek, they suffer, because either you break up, you die, or you suffer as a couple together. That just seems to be the, there's only like three couples that ever really stay together. You have the O'Briens, you have Paris and Torres, and then you have Will and Deanna. And everybody else, like,
it's true,
loses somebody at some point or suffers. For the visions, I always wondered what the delineating line between having visions and like the prophets actually speaking to you is. Like, where does that vision, do you actually have to have a physical embodiment talking at you? Like we see for Sisko, and later when the prophets finally do speak to Kai Winn, it's really the Pa Wraiths, but it's she thinks it's the prophets at first because they're finally visions of people speaking at her and specifically telling her things. So I always wondered where that blend was and how many people actually have the physical embodiment speaking to them. As for the episode itself, I do think Jake would have been writing like an archaeology article or something, or some cool journal history aspect. Especially if, you know, that one time he tried to write about the doctor, like this would have been a little bit more in depth, a little bit more things he can research and stuff. But I always wondered how much the Pa Wraiths were not just looking for someone who would hurt the emissary, but someone who maybe because of that strife and anger, almost a lot like was the key to letting them into Jake. Like maybe they had to find that strife against Sisko, you know, that discord with Sisko to, and that's why they picked Jake.
And if you like Discord, go ahead and join our Patreon account. And if you become a patron today, you can be a part of the Seventh Rule Discord. Sorry, please continue.
No, it's fine. I didn't know if that anger sort of attracted them, and that's why they ultimately chose him, besides actually being in the cave itself. But yeah, and the last thing, I always wondered, or assumed, that had Kai Winn not stopped that battle, then Sisko wouldn't have had to disappear and suffer at the end. And it's because she stopped that battle that led to Sisko and Jennifer having to suffer and part.
Interesting.
But, so it's all Kai Winn's fault.
Because everybody already assumed it would have
been resolved. Yeah, it would have been resolved right there.
May the prophets forgive me. Newsflash.
Well, that's why they never spoke to her, because her faith isn't real. It isn't genuine. So they're not going to talk to somebody who doesn't really, truly believe in them. And their only goal is their self-serving. You know, their
intentions, you know, who's
only self-serving.
You know whose faith is genuine? Kai Opaka. Yay. Hey, Erica, how are you?
Fine.
Erica, have you seen this episode recently? And by the way, this is the coolest cosplay ever. It looks amazing. The earring is super long and cool. Everybody that's just listening in, she's dressed as Kai Opaka, and she looks, as the British would say, brilliant in it.
Yeah, I have seen it recently, and I took a different take on Jake's role in this. I saw him go from a whinging little boy and turned into a man in that episode. So, you know, maybe the writing wasn't as bad as it should be. You know, it probably could have given him more, but I think it really did turn him into a man in this episode. Mm. And Kai Winn, I would not have given my job up if I knew she was going to go in.
Great.
So it's kind of your fault then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to have to take the blame.
That's funny. Wow. You look awesome.
Yeah, though. Eric. I will agree with you, Erica. I thought there were some moments that were poignant for Jake's growth. One of them was this scene where Jake and his father are sitting there just before that punch, actually, where Jake kind of reveals to him about how many times he's been on the verge of losing his dad, and you know, looking down on him at on a hospital bed, and how that was taking its toll on Jake. So that's a big thing for me, because you know, when you have a child and that child has able to work up the kind of nerve that it takes to talk to their parent about something that deeply affects them in this kind of a personal way, I think is a maturing kind of a sign of maturity. And also, the other moment that I felt was a growth moment for Jake was when Jake at the end essentially says, I saw how evil this thing was, and I realized that it needed to be killed, even if it meant that I would die. Mm-hmm. So another kind of growth moment for Jake. I thought that was a very adult and mature thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Good points. I think you just got muted, Erica. We couldn't hear you for a second there.
My internet may be glitchy.
Oh, we hear you now. Okay, great. It's a good point. Good point. All right. Well, since we're hanging out in the British Isles right now, let's hop over to Wales and say hello to Eve England. How are you, Eve?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah, I think all the points that everyone's made, I think, are all things that I picked up on. I really like this episode. I'm surprised it got a relatively low score. I just think it's got a bit of everything. I just love the fact that you had the balance between really serious messaging and we know where the consequence of this episode is going to lead to. But we've also got so much levity and humor, you know, particularly when Cisco smashes the, I burst out laughing. I just think that's when he goes, you just know he's going, oh shit. And when then he's speaking to Dax, she goes, you know, I stop myself from these urges. And it's just so funny because you just know, you knew something really bad was going to happen. You know, Kai Wynn is going to come in with her smarmy, punchable face. And there's just no way he can defend himself. And I just find those interactions were just, you know, they were such short moments, but they're just absolutely hilarious. And I just like how that juxtaposed then with the battle that we get at the end. But going back in terms of the special effects, in the companion, it talks about how they originally wanted something that was much more of a battle, but obviously for budget and time reasons, they had to scale it back and they decided to have more of a shootout, Harry Potter kind of duel between the two aliens at the end. And I was just going to ask Sirok whether, because you always hear about Marvel actors talking about how weird it is when you have to do all the special effects, you have to make all the funny faces and when there's actually nothing there for you to sort of play again. So there's a reference in the companion to Nana saying how she was just trying not to laugh at you because you were just trying to make her laugh and it was just, you were taking it so seriously. And I would just like to know a bit more about how you shot that and what it was like to film that.
Yeah. It's always a gamble when, you know, you have to rely on special effects and you know, they're like, don't worry, it'll look good. It'll look good later. And you're like, but this doesn't feel good. You're like, no, just stand there and thrust your pelvis. And he's like, all right. Where is this energy coming from? Here, there, how low, how far down, you know, where is it projecting from? So it's always weird when you're just like standing there. I could see Homer shaking his head, even though I can't see him at this point, but I just know it.
Yeah.
Now he's blushing.
But no, I just, it is a little awkward when you have to, you know, just basically stand there and they're telling you that, you know, okay, now thrust, you know, like it's more energy or you're, you know, this is the time when more power is coming out of you or you're looking defeated now. The energy's beating you. So, I mean, you're just going off of really what the director says and you're hoping that at the end of the day, it's going to get all pieced together and look good. There were moments when Nana and I were just standing there, like staring at each other, trying not to laugh because it felt so stupid and silly.
Especially because you had worms on your face, too.
Yeah.
I have to to say, it actually, I think it actually came across very really well, didn't it? I mean, I was actually really impressed with it. And I that when that moment when we see Evil Jake for the first time, I was like, yeah, this is amazing. This is like, your facial expressions just totally changed the character. And I thought, considering it was actually a very low movement kind of scene, it did. Yeah. I mean, it's as good and if not better than some of the new Marvel stuff that you see. So I think you obviously set the high standards in that episode.
God bless your heart. Thank you. I'm glad you feel that way. I didn't feel like that at the time. I was like, oh, this is the last thing I'll ever do right here.
If it's the last thing I'll ever do.
This is it.
Wow. Good stuff. Let's just keep it going to the blusher himself, Homer Freezy, out somewhere in New Yeezy.
Yeah.
We love you, Homer.
So, thank you. I'm just going to pick a particular moment that I saw, and I don't know if it was directed or not, but when Prophet Kira is talking to the Cisco on Deep Space Nine, Kai Winn, Louise Fletcher, is not looking at Kira, but is looking at the Cisco, at the emissary. And I feel as though that was used to sort of give you an indication, maybe, but she did it. And then afterwards, she is like, take me, am I not worthy? Kind of like, and so I felt like there was this anger that she had against the emissary there. And that's what I interpreted as. And it's there briefly. And I thought that was brilliant.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Sirach was calling
totally
it
jealous of him.
Jealousy. Exactly. That's what Sirach was calling it. Yeah. Jealous. Definitely. Yeah. Good point.
And then other than that, the Cisco got thrown around once by a rock and once by a paw wraith.
Yeah.
How does he still have a working spine?
I know.
That's what I wanted to say, though, in the review. But when the evil Jake shows up and it's the four of us on the thing, so it's good Kira, evil Jake, and then the Kai and Cisco. So evil Jake shows up and he does this hand gesture, which makes Cisco fly back 20 feet, right?
Yeah.
And I notice Kai kind of turns around and starts walking away like, okay,
let's go. Yeah, well, this has been fun.
That moment was hilarious to me. Like, oh, she knows when it's time to leave, though. She knows that much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Ryan Galloway, no relation to Joey Galloway, former wide receiver, right?
No relation.
Of the Seahawks, I believe it was. Have you seen this episode recently?
I have, yeah.
What'd you think? So, did you love it?
I really enjoyed it again, yeah. We're good seeing it again. I saw Dax a little bit as comic relief in the beginning. When she's talking about the tablet, when she says, like, well, that confirms it. It's a slab of stone with some writing on it. Yeah. I found that kind of funny. And then you know something is always going to happen or go wrong when Kai Winn comes to the station.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter which episode, something always happens.
That is true.
And then initially when I watched it, when it first aired, I was about 12 years old again. Seeing Jake Sisko become a Paw Wraith was quite surprising to me. I didn't know who was the Paw Wraith was going to pick to embrace. And then also first time watching it back then was, couldn't believe that they could be killing off a main character. Hmm. Jake Sisko or Major Kira. And then Kai Winn intervened in Ferris's history.
Yeah.
I found that interesting too.
Yeah, can you imagine if they killed Kira or Jake in that episode? People would have been like, where'd that come from? Why'd you do that?
Left field.
Things that
go
through your mind when you're only 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, If they would have killed one of them, there's only one person evil enough to do that, and that's Galdu Scott. Everybody knows. What do you think of this episode? Yeah, right, says the guy that wants to hurt everybody.
Yeah.
This had a lot of, like, I did really enjoy what people were saying about the, there's bits of comedy thrown in there, which one of my favorite moments is how Sisko so visibly and physically just embodies exhaustion when Worf tells him that Kai Winn is on the way. And he does the full-on facepalm. And just, everybody felt that moment 100%. Yeah,
like father, God. Like son, 100%. Right,
Sirach? Yeah. He gets seen by that guy in the back as well, that Bajoran is there, and he catches him doing it, and then he's like, oh, shit. I thought that just makes it even more funny. It was nice funny anyway.
Emissary's tired, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Sirach was pulling some Jeff Combs level work in this one. He played three characters in one episode.
Yeah.
Right.
Played Jake, played a Pare, and a Prophet all in one.
And a Prophet.
So that was some heavy lifting there, man.
Yep.
Then you got to do cool X-Men stuff at the end, too. So,
but to that point, Sirach, did you get triple pay then for playing three characters?
No. The only thing thing they triple up is your work schedule. That's what I
read. Yeah. Sorry, I jumped on you there, Scott. What else?
Oh no. And this also the whole conversation with Dax and Sisko talking over the tablet brings up one of my favorite questions about DS9. When Dax is like, wormhole aliens, and she goes, it wasn't too long ago you were calling them that too, now you're calling them prophets. And one of my favorite thing to ask the people who tell me that they love DS9 is, the question is, are they the prophets or are they the wormhole aliens? And there's different ways to answer it, but the only right way is to just say yes. Because they are and they aren't at the same time. That's definitely, that question was definitely brought up, and I love it every time that that's answered. And I love that DS9 left that open, that it is your open-ended decision what road to take down. Bajorans are, I think, a little bit better at spirituality over religion than humans are in reality. So very much a difference in that a lot of Bajorans, their hearts really are in the right place towards being spiritual more than like a dogmatic Kai Winn, which is why she's such a contrast to the rest of them. So to have Dax, who is somebody who's lived hundreds of years, just be like, they're wormhole aliens, come on. You know, I think that's a pretty cool juxtaposition to always pop up in the show that I always love every time I see that.
Very good. Good point. And Dr. Muhammad Noor is throwing hearts your way for those great points you made. And so I'm sure we'll be throwing hearts back with your great points.
So I watched this just before the Virtual Trek concert, still a little hazy from the excitement in between. But the one thing that occurred to me, and I would love if we had like one of the writers on, I would like to know if there was an intentional or it was just coincidental connection to like the essentially biblical or Torah version of Abraham, right? Because essentially, remember, Abraham was willing to give up his son. Mm-hmm. Well, in Jewish and Christian tradition, it was Isaac. In Muslim tradition, it was Ishmael, but same idea, just as a test of faith. And at the last minute, then he was spared and he was replaced with a ram and all those kinds of things. I was curious if that was intentional there, because basically Sisko was Abraham in this episode. So I thought that was interesting, but I don't know if that was just coincidental, because, you know, people always give up stuff.
Sirach noticed the same thing, right, Sirach? Yeah.
Ah.
I did, Muhammad. I think that it's intentional. They talked about faith. They talked about the sacrifice of the son, which is essentially the sacrifice of a son originates in the Abraham story in the Old Testament. And that's why the modern religions that we talk about, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, all refer to the God of Abraham, referring to this moment in which you're describing, in which Abraham was willing to sacrifice his son and God intervened and said, no, because you showed the faith that you were willing to do it, that shows me how strong your faith is. And I think that was the same kind of
moral lesson encoded in this episode. It was Sisko's willingness to sacrifice, if that's what it took, which proves or shows him to be kind of this morally sound character that's worthy of the prophets or worthy of God's, you know, blessings, essentially. Yeah.
That he's fully now embraced it too, as opposed to like in the earlier seasons. I mean, that's as you said, the ultimate test.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts?
I think it's purposeful, Muhammad. I think it's all purposeful. I think even the names Benjamin, Jacob, and Joseph, all purposeful.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. Yeah, much so.
I didn't think about that. When I was a little kid, my mom told me that story. And at the end of the story, she said, "So what is that called?" And she wanted me to say faith. And at the time, I was like six, and I was like, "Child abuse." That's the answer
she wanted. At all. It's all about a balance, man. It's all about balance.
Any other thoughts on the episode, Muhammad?
I mean, everything else I was thinking has already been said by others. I appreciate it. I mean, I especially agree with Melissa's comment. I thought Dax's behavior was a little unusual, but I agree with what everybody else said as well, too.
I mean, she was kind of just taking the scientific point of view of like, well, you know, tomato, tomato. She's like, well, you guys are looking at it from the faith point of view. I'm looking at it as these are aliens.
She's incurious, which was unusual. Like,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Right. Her which is anti-science. Right.
Good right. Point. Her mind wasn't as open.
Exactly.
A scientist would be just as the most excited people if there was some kind of proof of something beyond whatever we know. They wouldn't be like, nope. They'd be like, they'd carry you out on their shoulders. They'd be like, wow, new information. Awesome.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've had our fun today, really more than should be allowed, but we make our own rules. Thank you all for joining us. Erica, Muhammad, Goldu Scott, Eve England, Homer, Ryan Tierney, Melissa, TJ, Sue, and Anna showing off the really cool place that she's hanging out in. For myself and Sirach Lofton and Aaron Eisenberg, we'll see you next time. And until then, always remember the seventh rule, or we'll be so pissed. My child.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.